This is Artist Stories, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County. I'm your host, Ava Romero. Today, I'm with Leah Maas, Managing Director of Southwest Folklife Alliance. Welcome, Leah.
Hello.
I want to make sure we talk about Tucson Meet Yourself, as it's happening October 11, 12, and 13. For someone who's never been, could you describe what they will see, smell, and experience?
That's a great question. What a beautiful intro. Tucson Meet Yourself, if you've never been, is a diverse expression of our local community. If you've never been to Tucson Meet Yourself, it's held and hosted in the heart of our city. It's surrounded by three stages, over 48 food vendors, 500 artists all singing, dancing, drumming, sharing their cultural expression with the public at large. It is a gathering of over 100 to 120,000 people. It is an expression of who we are as a community.
So I understand that it had to move locations from where it was near the courthouse to Giacome Plaza because there were some concerns about the structural safety because the festival has become so huge.
That's right. So Tucson Meet Yourself started in 1974, founded by Dr. James Griffith, otherwise known as Big Jim. Jim started the festival right in front of City Hall on a grassy knoll. There were about 20 tradition bearers and his family, his wife, his children, who have all grown up in the festival. And they simply started Tucson Meet Yourself, and Jim will say this very plainly. He realized as a folklorist, as an anthropologist, as a community member, that there were a whole lot of people in this community who were doing incredible things, sharing their expression within their own homes, their churches, their community centers, but they were going unrecognized in the city at that time. And mind you, this is 1974, so this is like kind of the beginning of a multicultural movement in our nation. Fast forward to today, 46 years later, we have grown the festival footprint. We have engaged over 600 volunteers who make the festival happen. We have new curation through Dr. Maribel Alvarez, our UA public folklorist. We've maintained that vision, honoring traditions and expressions within the region. But to do that required an expansion outside of just City Hall location. So last year, because of the size of the public, the population that attends the festival, we officially became too heavy to be on the Presidio Plaza.
The festival is so iconic for Tucson, as a matter of fact, that it's commonly known as Tucson Eat Yourself. But it's more than just a food festival, quote unquote. No offense to any food festivals. But there is definitely something that makes this experience really unique. It's not just the transaction of getting food and paying for it, eating it, but there's more around it.
Definitely. So the food court area of Tucson Meet Yourself, there are over 50 food vendors who participate every year, and 90% of them are not restaurants. They're not places that you could return to during any other time of the year. They're ethnic social clubs, they're student clubs, they're churches, they're community centers, and they're our partners. So partnership has been very important to our organization and to the festival. And when I say partnership, I mean that they're making decisions with us about the conditions of the festival, about the way in which they're sharing their own cultural expression. So they're really there for two reasons. One is to share their cultural knowledge with the public at large, which is why the booths are dripping with decorations. Individuals are typically wearing their traditional heritage-based clothing or regalia. The intention is really to steep the public at large in the expressions of our community, whether it's smelling the barbecue from CD's Jamaican barbecue on your clothes for days after you've attended the festival, or whether it's admiring the bright golden robes worn by the Wat Butametatai Buddhist monks. The other element of the food court area for Tucson Meet Yourself that continues on throughout the entire year is that each of those ethnic social clubs and churches and cultural groups are raising over 87% of their overall operating budgets at the festival. So it is it's a major fundraiser for those organizations. We learned a couple years ago through a letter that came to us from the Wat Butometa Thai Buddhist Temple that Tucson Meet Yourself became the center of their capital campaign. And as a result of selling pad Thai and Thai iced tea for those 3 days, their organization was able to expand the size of their Buddhist temple. We've sent entire Polish dance troops, Lykonic Polish dance troupe has been every year using the revenue from selling pierogies at the festival to attend as one of the only representatives of the U.S. International Polish Dance Festival in Poland. Not necessarily what the public sees when they attend the event, but on the backside, behind the front facade of each of those food booths are community members who are volunteering their time, putting all of the love and care into making food the same way that they would have experienced it in their own kitchens, bringing that to you in the public and then supporting their own communities year round. And that's something really significant for us. And so we take that role really seriously.
Is there a way to do the festival that you would like to recommend? Like I always tell people, get something to eat when you're ready to eat, get something to eat, and then take it and stand in line at the next place and just eat and wait at the same time through a few cycles.
So that's really good advice because the food vendors are very popular. Last year was the first year we experienced rain at the festival, and we were pretty proud of ourselves for maintaining all 3 days of the festival. We had a majority of our food vendors stayed, none of our performers canceled. The food lines were just as long, if not longer, than they had been in previous years. We had some vendors sell out by Saturday night. You know, we recognize that Tucson is a very different place now than it was in 1974. So, for example, when Tucson became the City of Gastronomy, the UNESCO designation of City of Gastronomy, Tucson Meet Yourself was a part of that. We dedicated our demonstration kitchen to a celebration of that designation, to celebrate the 4,000 years of heritage-based foodways knowledge that we have in our region, that we continue to cultivate, that we preserve.
You had a story that I really loved how it illustrated the human heart of the festival, the story about a certain taxi cab ride.
So Tucson Meet Yourself is one of many other folklife festivals that happen nationally. The Smithsonian was actually the first folklife festival in the nation, but we continue to hold the title as being the longest consecutively running folklife festival in the nation. As an organization, we invite a guest folklorist to the festival every year to literally hang out and give us some sense of what they see we're doing right, where they see we might have some areas of improvement, and where there may be some innovation happening sort of behind the scenes that we may not even realize. So several years ago, we invited, at that time, the director of Maryland Traditions, Cliff Murphy, who is now the director of the NEA Folk and Traditional Arts, to come to Tucson and hang out and be our guest folklorist. And it was my job to pick him up on the first day of the festival and walk him to the festival grounds and begin to show him around. And so I met Cliff. We had put him up at the time at the Museum of Contemporary Art in their artist residency spaces. And when I met Cliff, he said, "You'll never believe the conversation that I had with my cab driver." I said, "No, tell me about it." And he said, "Well, as I got out of the airport, I got into the cab, and the cabbie asked me why I was here in Tucson. And I said, well, I'm here to go to a festival, the Tucson Meet Yourself Festival." The gentleman behind the wheel began to immediately tell a robust story about Big Jim, about our founder. And he asked Cliff, "Do you know Big Jim?" And Cliff said, "I do." "Oh, let me tell you all about Big Jim and Tucson Meet Yourself." And he began to tell stories about his community's relationship to the festival, about how kind and exceptionally inspirational Big Jim was. So when Cliff and I met, he asked me, he said, did you know the cab driver who picked me up? Because I really felt like maybe this was a setup. I said, no, not at all. Later in his report, Cliff actually wrote to us that he believed that Tucson Meet Yourself was one of the few folklife festivals that really had a diversity within its attendees that that mirrored the diversity on the stages. And when we talk about folklife, you know, the everyday cultural experiences of communities and community members, we are also we're talking about everyday people. He did make us more than once promise that we hadn't set him up with a cab driver. but it's to the testament of the festival. I think the festival is both under the leadership of Dr. Maribel Alvarez as a curator and our founder, Big Jim, have set a precedent of responding to community members, to listening.
You had mentioned the word food pathways, and you had mentioned the Southwest Folklife Alliance was a part of Tucson receiving its City of Gastronomy designation from UNESCO. And I've heard that we've had these foodways for 4,000 years. And it's really hard for me to wrap my brain around what kind of foodways could we point to from 4,000 years ago that have some sort of a line that we could trace.
I think first we have to recognize that the land that we exist on here in Tucson is ancestral Tohono-O'odham land. It's ancestral Pascua-Yaqui land, and that there have been migratory patterns of humans moving through this region for over 4,000 years. And so our Sonoran Desert, the Sonoran Desert ecology, holds that traditional foodways knowledge. I had a conversation recently with the past director, he just retired, of the Tohono-O'odham Cultural Center, Bernard Siqueiros, who said to me that he had an elder ask him why people were so interested in indigenous food all of a sudden. He said, I don't know what more there is to get. He said, I open my door and I look in the desert and there's my grocery store. So I think most importantly, the designation gives us an opportunity to recognize that indigenous and traditional knowledge have been working with local and native plants throughout the Sonoran Desert for a long time, a long, long time. It's in the heritage wheats, it's in the cholla buds, it's in the nopal, it's in a multitude of indigenous foods that exist here in the region that have been used for many, many different ways, for medicine, for food, for sustenance, for cultural celebration. So you'll find some of those heritage-based foodways experts in the Culture Kitchen at Tucson Meet Yourself that's curated by Leanne Hernandez. That's the space that we celebrate that designation.
I know that you're not supposed to name favorites, probably. But do you have a favorite thing to eat at the festival?
So the first thing that I do every year is not on the first day, usually on Saturday or Sunday, I'll try to eat whatever food vendor is new to the festival. In some years, it's been Oaxacan food. In years past, SFA has also supported special fellowships for emerging food vendors, individuals who are either within a cultural community and interested in starting a restaurant, or families who have exceptional recipes and just would like to learn what it's like to scale up. This year, we have a group of Burmese women. They have a food stand called Fat Mama's Gangster Sandwich. And that just sounds fascinating to me. So I'm really excited this year for Fat Mama's Gangster Sandwich. One of my dearest friends growing up in high school, her father was Turkish, and she would make me Turkish coffee. And so I am obligated every year at the festival to have a Turkish coffee. And I actually Skype with my girlfriend at some point in time when I can take a break. We work, by the way, for 72 hours, staff and volunteers at the festival, and it is a labor of love. And so I drink my cup of Turkish coffee and I Skype with my girlfriend for 5 minutes somewhere on the festival footprint. And I show her my cup of nothing but the grounds left in my little Turkish Dixie cup. And she tells me what kind of day I'm going to have. So that's the second, my personal fave. I have to have a Turkish cup of Turkish coffee, and I like to eat whatever's new. My daughter, my 8-year-old daughter, who is deeply afraid of crowds, and so she for many years when she was really little just didn't want to, couldn't hang with the crowds, didn't want to be around all the crowds until she went behind the scenes and met some of the food vendors. And so I think it was a Saturday, 3-day festival. So she would came down on Friday and cried all day. She was about 4. And I brought her back on Saturday and I introduced her to all the food vendors I knew. And so we spent some time with Faiza, and Faiza makes incredible baklava and dolmas. And then we spent some time with CD and the Jamaican jerk chicken. And then we spent some time with the Turkish club, having some sema, having some Turkish coffee and some sweets, more baklava, and Turkish ice cream, right? Which is an entertaining experience, a performance unto itself. So by the second day, by the last day of the festival on Sunday, I woke up in the morning, you know, at dawn, ready to run out the door, and said, "Are you gonna meet me down there? Will you come down and see me for the festival?" And she said, "Maybe I'll come for a snack." And since then, I'm not joking, she saves money of her own to go, and she marks off all the food she wants to eat, and she comes down. Last year, her favorite was the Cuban booth, was Patricia, who makes incredible ropa vieja. So some years I just follow my daughter, and what she eats, I eat.
Yum. So as we talk about some of the goals of the festival and how it's put together, a rather loaded word comes to mind, the word authenticity. Mm. I feel like authenticity can be a tricky word because it kind of puts down a dividing line that separates the true from the fake. So it's inclusive and exclusive. But authenticity also is having a special moment, right? Because it refers to this real, unmediated, person-to-person human experience that people are so hungry for. They want to have an experience that is sensorial, that is in person, that is a real moment of connection. I feel like maybe we're a little bit more hungry or thirsty for that now because of all of the mediated interactions that we have to have through screens. I guess my question is, how does authenticity come up in the conversations that Southwest Folklife Alliance is having when you make decisions about the festival?
It's a very, very good question. I think there's a really interesting tension that we have a responsibility to share in the festival around honoring the ongoing heritage-based traditions that come directly from a community, a cultural community, and have evolved in many cases. There are several tensions that are influencing communities' abilities to express themselves authentically, meaning defined by themselves within their communities. And so in some cases in the festival, you'll see that we are intentionally curating very traditional forms of expression within a community. The mariachi movement, for example. You will see mariachi at the festival every year. We pay close attention to the groups, typically young groups, that we foster because we want to recognize and uplift our long trajectory in history as a community that has, in some cases, been the epicenter for the mariachi movement in the Southwest. However, you'll also find spaces that could be contested by an outsider that may really speak to the folk life within a community. For example, we have in folk arts this year, we've invited the Dunbar Barber Academy to bring a barbershop chair down to the festival and do fades all day long, haircuts all day long. Now, the haircut itself is pretty utilitarian. Most people need their hair cut. Barbers is where you go to get them cut, get it done. But by bringing that experience from rooted in an African American tradition associated with the unique and essential role of the barbershop, we're able to traverse those lines between tradition and everyday expressions.
So could you tell me briefly about Southwest Folklife Alliance programming that's not Tucson Meet Yourself?
So the festival, Southwest Folklife Alliance became an organization, again, building on 40 years of festival production and presentation. So all of our programs in some way, shape, or form do have a responsibility to echo the values that are rooted in the festival experience. So our programs seek to share knowledge. They seek to preserve traditional forms of expression. And they also seek to support and develop the cultural equity that is in place within communities. We have a program entitled the Master of Traditional Arts Program. It's a Master Apprentice Award program, so we provide a cash award to 10 Master Traditional Artists throughout the state. What's interesting about that is that we're able to identify forms that are less visible. This year we're making an award to an adobe brickmaker. We're making an award to a blacksmith. So we have a beautiful representation this year in occupational folklife. So the forms of cultural expression that are rooted in an occupation. We have some incredible indigenous artists that we're supporting this year. We have a mother-daughter team of Navajo beaders who make beaded necklaces that emulate the weaving patterns of their mothers. We are featuring at Tucson Meet Yourself this year two past awardees of the Master Apprentice Program, both Anita Koru, who's a basket maker, a Hopi basket maker, and Anthony Belvedo, who's a San Carlos Apache fiddle maker. We have a program, Border Lore. Our e-journal is ethnographic documentation at its best. Our editor, Kimi Eisel, features tradition bearers and community members throughout the state. It's thematic, it's fun, it's a form of sharing knowledge that comes from a first voice narrative.
You have a story about the volume on fire and firefighting.
Oftentimes people ask questions of organizations about their programs. So what do you do? And I think something that's really important for us to always share is not just what we do, but how we do it. So for example, we are deeply committed to the practice of folklife and ethnographic fieldwork, which is about providing opportunities for community members to share their experiences and stories in their own terms and in their own vernacular. Last year, our editor, Kimi Eisel, did a feature story on fires. And it was at a time in our state when there happened to have been many fires throughout the White Mountain region. There were fires in California. There was a lot of quite frightening media around the risk and loss and depletion. And so Kimi decided, along with Maribel, to feature a border lore on all of the resilient cultural knowledge within the concept of fires and firefighters. And so she went up to the San Carlos, the White Mountain Apache community, and did an interview with a female Apache firefighter, all about how she used both her occupational folk life, her knowledge as a firefighter, and her traditional knowledge of stewardship as an Indigenous tribal member to understand more deeply the role of the regenerative role of fires. Kami did the article, spent some time in the community. About a year later, the same individual contacted Kami and asked her if she would come and be a participant in her daughter's Sundance ceremony, which is a ritual rite of passage. Not only did she invite her to the community to attend and be a participant, she also invited her to document the whole experience. So you'll see, not in this Border Lore, but in the Border Lore, I think last month, the August issue, is an issue featuring rites of passage among women, and a piece that is written by the young woman whose rite of passage it was, the daughter of the firefighter. The work that we engage with in, the how in our work, is really essentially about fostering and building ethical relationships. I think that's really evident in the way in which our staff, our community, the folklorists we work with, the tradition bearers we work with, the sense of integrity that we take into our work really does foster long-term relationship building within communities. And we become responsible to one another. Tucson Meet Yourself is the only festival that hosts the public demonstration of the Pascua Yaqui Deer Dance. And it's the last performance on the stage out of honor and respect for the Pascua Yaqui. Likewise, the Tohono O'odham do the basket dance, a social, open public social dance on the other stage as the last act of the festival on Sunday.
Being that Southwest Folklife Alliance has a mission of supporting expressions of culture, heritage, and diversity, how do you apply that mission internally in the way you do things within the organization?
So we have a small but mighty team, and we work in partnership with a very dedicated board. We're an interesting organization in that we are a nonprofit organization, but we are one of few that has a direct affiliation status with the University of Arizona. Maribel Alvarez, for example, the Jim Griffith Chair in Public Folklore and the founder of SFA, she was the executive director who worked with the board, and Jim at the time, who's still on our board, to launch SFA. She's actually a scholar on loan to the nonprofit. There are 49% of our board are all U of A affiliates, and the other 51 are community member independent directors. So we have a unique relationship from an academic perspective with our field of folklore and folklife. And that, I think, reinforces not just the pedagogy, but the practices that we engage in as staff. We also have a non-hierarchical leadership model, which we find in many of the communities we work within. So we really do try to foster a horizontal, adaptive leadership model. We have, in many years, expressed that through inviting Tucson Meet Yourself partners as committee members or as board members. For example, the chair of arms for the Duke's Lowrider Car Club has for many years been part of our larger partnership in Tucson Meet Yourself. We've invited performers who performed for many years to join our board and our leadership. So I think we're interested in sharing knowledge. We're interested in understanding multiple world views. But I think what's interesting is that we do try to foster and adopt the same types of skills that we would use as folklorists doing field work, of being respectful, of asking questions, of questioning our own assumptions, of understanding that there are different notions of time within a worldview. There are different ways in which we build capital. There are different ways in which we can enable agency or not.
One last question, if I may, Leah. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you came to be the managing director of Southwest Folklife Alliance?
I've spent about 15 years of my life working in the nonprofit cultural sector. I came to nonprofit management as an artist. I was traditionally trained as a community muralist in San Francisco, California, and moved to Tucson, Arizona on a vacation.
Wait a minute. You were on vacation and then you just stayed here?
Yes. I was prepared. My husband and I were prepared to make a transition in our lives, but didn't expect to make it as soon as we did. But we did arrive to Tucson in December and never left, with the intention of just visiting. So I come to my field with the experience of having been an artist, working within communities, and found myself in a point in which it became really apparent to me that I needed to be engaged in the work of being a creative professional from a policy standpoint. And so I took a position at the former Tucson Pima Arts Council. Between that work and understanding that creativity has a very important role in systems and in systems change, and understanding that the role of our sector, tradition bearers, cultural professionals, artists, artisans, requires just as much work behind the scenes to ensure that it's supported and thriving. You know, we all have a responsibility to lift each other up. We often joke that one of the methods of organizational structure that Big Jim left behind was to lead from behind.
Thank you for being with us today, Leah.
Thank you.
This has been Artist Stories with Ava Romero, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. To listen to more podcasts, visit kxci.org. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County.